Welcome to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. And Happy New Year, Florida. Hope you had a great holiday. We're going to kick things off as 2020 begins by looking back to what happened here in this state 4 years ago. In 2016, Russian hackers broke into the election computer networks of two Florida counties. But the hackers don't even have to get into election systems to cause problems with the vote this year.
Yeah, there are misinformation efforts, social media bots, and going after the public websites of election supervisors. Those supervisors face all these risks in the 2020 election. Here's Secretary of State Laura Lee speaking last month at a meeting of the state's cybersecurity task force.
Threats to election security are constant and evolving, and we must remain ever vigilant in our efforts to keep our state secure. Every single day, domestic and foreign adversaries attempt to infiltrate our networks. And while we have made extraordinary progress since 2018, we recognize that there will be no finish line when it comes to election security.
Now, in addition to the cyber threats, we all know that Florida has a history of close elections and, unfortunately, trouble with recounting close votes. Remember, just last year, or actually 2 years ago in 2018, three statewide races were so close on election night they went into a mandatory recount. And then there were days of problems with ballots, missing votes, and changing results in a couple of counties, Tom. Not what we wanted to see in Florida after the 2000 debacle.
No, but we certainly did see it in 2018, and now looking forward to what will happen in 2020, of course. This is the most recent history that Floridians have dealt with as they prepare to vote later on this year. Millions of tax dollars, meantime, have been spent and are being spent to shore up election security and to work to reassure voters that every vote will count. So this is what we're talking about this hour, as we're now, what, 3 months away from the presidential primary, 10 months away from Election Day 2020. Yeah,
it's amazing. It's right upon us. So we're so pleased to welcome two experts who know the ins and outs of our election systems. They have devoted their careers to this. Tammy Jones is with us. She's president of Florida Supervisors of Elections, and also joining the show, Ian Sancho, the former supervisor of elections for Leon County. That's the Tallahassee area. And we thank you both so much for being on the Florida Roundup. Tammy, let's start with you. How concerned are you about Secretary of State Laurel Lee's reminder that threats to our election security in Florida are constant, as she says, and evolving, with attempts to hack in happening almost every single day?
Well, I that's a good question, and I want to assure the public that Florida supervisors are taking every effort and treating this as their top priority. We have accomplished a lot in the last years, and we are proud to be the first state to all be on the Albert system, which will detect any intrusion. Unlike us, not, you know, 2016, we did not even know what Albert was. We also are on MSISAC alerts, and we are working with state, federal agencies and to ensure that we are ready and prepared. And as she said, you know, it's ever-changing, and we have to stay on top of it, and we can never let our guard down.
Tammy, describe that alert system you mentioned that supervisors will have in 2020 that they didn't have in 2016. How does that work, and what will it tell election supervisors across the state?
Well, it's a system that is working through MSISAC, and this system it's called the Albert server, and it's actually a system that is able to detect any intrusion into our system. For example, if the electricity goes off, I'll get an alert saying, you know, hey, there's something going on with your system. Any type of unusual IP addresses that looks like it's hitting the outside of our firewall. Of course, nothing's inside the firewall per se, but so it's something that we has worked. We know it works. Not that we've had any problems, but for example, in my county, we, you know, have power outages sometime in a rural county, and it actually will alert when we lose our internet connectivity, for example. But the main purpose of it is to ensure that any type of intrusion or unusual activity is key, that that unusual activity is reported and we can immediately respond. So that's very important. The immediate response is very important in situations if you were to get ransomware or something like that, that you could, you know, immediately, you know, turn things off and act appropriately.
And respond to it. According to Secretary of State Lee, all 67 Florida counties are using this Albert system. Ian Sancho, you're a retired supervisor of elections from Leon County, Tallahassee. And you're well known, I think it's fair to say, as a strong advocate sounding the alarm about the vulnerabilities of our system. So what are your top concerns heading into 2020?
Well, first of all, I would like to congratulate the Florida supervisors of elections. They are working as hard as they can with the limited resources that they do have to essentially ensure that our election procedures will work as well as they can. I certainly have no criticism of the supervisor of elections, but they're not in charge of this process. The Florida legislature is in charge of this process. And one of the major concerns that I have and have shared with my associates for over a decade is the fact that the state of Florida does not audit its ballots. The audit provision that the state of Florida has in our statutes takes place after the certification of elections. And it is this audit that I believe is the missing key to ensuring that the votes on the piece of papers, which are scanned by electronic optical machines and then transmitted electrically to wherever they're going, and may be manipulated, particularly if you're using something, for example, like Wi-Fi or the internet, which some of the systems have, which I completely argue against. No system may be transmitted on a digital system in this state, in my opinion. They should be all hardwired, lined, analog, which are not penetratable by things such as a Stingray device, which can hit any tower and manipulate numbers.
Ian, we're going to talk about tabulation here a little bit later on in the program specifically, but I want to get back to your critique there about the audit after certification. This is the timeline, obviously, that happens after Election Day. Are you advocating that that timeline for certification be lengthened somehow?
Well, changed. For example, our certification period comes, our audit comes after the certification period. Under Chapter 102, if in fact the audit determines that there was an error in an election, it may not be altered. You may not go to court unless you can prove fraud. Mere mechanical error, an individual flipping a switch that provides wrong numbers to the supervisor of elections and then to the state, that's not correctable because the audit occurs after the certification period. The certification period I'm not advocating that it be extended. I'm advocating that the audit period be a part of the regular recount of any ballot that needs to be counted in the state of Florida. If, in fact, we have been penetrated, and again, the Albert system is a wonderful system, but it kind of reminds me of that commercial where you've got that bank guard standing there while a robbery's going on, and he says, there's a bank robbery going on. You've been warned. Oh, I can't interfere. That's not my job. Albert can't interfere. The job of intercepting and controlling that penetration actually is the function of the supervisor of elections. They've been warned, but the actual corrective measures to ensure that whatever kind of attack may occur, that's the issue. We don't know what we don't know. The FBI has been penetrated. The National Security NSA has been penetrated. NASA's been penetrated. Our banking institutions annually run deficits of $2 billion in losses for internet fraud. It's all covered by insurance. That doesn't help the voting world. What we don't know is not going to protect us from what we don't know. But what we do know is if there has been a penetration to the system that of tabulation of votes, simply auditing the paper ballots, which every county possesses, would render such a penetration useless. And so that's the number one thing that I see Florida needing to do is, in fact, audit the ballots, with a robust audit to confirm to every voter in this state that every electronic figure that is generated is in fact true. We do not do that today. Because even the recounts that we had in the three statewide elections in December, in fact, those numbers changed from the first official results on the Saturday.
More than once, as I recall. Yeah.
Well, actually, they changed several times in several jurisdictions, and that's not supposed to occur. That's probably due to human error.
Let me get Tammy to react to that. What about this concern being raised by Ion Sancho? Do the state supervisors need to take this additional step of auditing the paper ballots to shore up confidence in the vote?
We do an audit. I think what he's talking about is providing the audit during a recount as well, that the capability. Let me start first with we do logic and accuracy tests before each election. So we take the card that's actually going to be used in the election. We have random sampling of ballots that we know the predetermined number, and it can be changed, or we can, you know, do what we need to do. But that is done before, in front of the public. They can ask questions, and we're there. We encourage the public to attend these meetings to learn more about the actual equipment. But that test is actually done to ensure that all the proper programming is done to ensure that oval goes to the correct person. So that LNA test is actually pre. So we do that before any machines are sent out and any ballots are put through the machine. Also, I want to mention, in my county, we do not use any wireless method, but we do use a line to modem in our results. But I want to mention that a paper receipt is actually printed with the results and brought back to the office to compare to the results that were modemed in. So if there were any, you know, per se interference possible, that we verified those results on the piece of paper from the machine before even touched a phone line. And we do audits after the election. Some are manual audits. So, for example, the law says you have to, in my county, since it's so small, we do one precinct and one race. And it's random. So then you have to gather all those ballots and you put them into stacks and you ensure that the outcome was correct during that election. Just like a bank audits money, you know, after each day, you want to make sure after each election that your votes match what they said election day.
But should that audit happen before, but Tammy, should that audit happen before the election results are certified?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So before they're certified.
Because, Ion, your point
is...
That's my point.
That would take legislative change. I mean, that is, like Ion said, it is in law, statute, the way the supervisors do conduct the audits. And some supervisors do have the audit system, and our association, that is one of our priorities this year, is to get that audit system approved. It's already approved for audits. It's not, the audits aren't done before until that you do certify the election. But our association right now is looking to get that legislatively changed to where the audit system can also be used during recounts, because it really does help. It helps us to be better prepared and know organize the ballots correctly. It helps the supervisors that have it and that I've spoke to. I currently don't have the audit system because it is.
Yeah. So, Ion, what about that? It's up to the legislature.
Well, this is correct. And the actual bill was in last year's legislative bill, Senate Bill 7066, had the provision to provide for the audits in the use of recounts that was stripped out by the legislature, by the House committee that had oversight over this. That language, that audit language, was removed in last year's bill. And yes, the Florida State Supervisor of Elections have put it in this year. It is a priority. We have one legislative session coming up this spring, and that, to me, is the number one priority that must be done.
Ion, would an audit...
I want to make a quick comment. At the federal level, too, there is a bipartisan bill in Washington meant to deter foreign governments from interfering in the U.S. electoral process. But it's been bogged down in committee. That's another wrinkle that we can talk about this hour.
Well, certainly the partisanship and certainly Senator McConnell has made it clear no election bill will be going through the Senate this year. He's made it clear all the money that federal government has provided, which is the $5.1 million, that's it. The fact of the matter is jurisdictions all over this country need new voting equipment. The state of Florida is luckier than most, but even in the state of Florida, jurisdictions need to upgrade some of their equipment. But again, all of these protections.
And I will say the couple counties that needed upgrading, they have, all the counties have upgraded to the newest equipment. The counties that were on the older stuff that wasn't, was out of date, they everybody's on, you know, the newest equipment. So we have made huge improvements since 2016. And Florida is ahead of the game, I think, in a lot of ways. Florida
I would
people
concur,
should be
Tammy,
very proud of us, I believe.
Well, in this respect, Florida is not that far behind anyone, because quite frankly, across the country, hardly anyone is doing audits. This is kind of America's dirty little election secret. I can count on one hand, and I can tell you who they are: Colorado, Maryland, Rhode Island, and New Mexico. Four states do complete, robust audits. That, in fact, if their tabulators have been penetrated, these states have systems that will catch it absolutely. The rest of the nation, not so much.
So
the issue of selecting one precinct to sample, quite frankly, is kind of ludicrous if the race that's been penetrated is not the one that's been selected.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, as a supervisor from an urban jurisdiction, the greatest number of races you have on a ballot are local and nonpartisan
mm-hmm.
races.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in the 28 years that we've been doing this audit after certification, a federal race has never been selected in Leon County.
Ian, an audit, and Tammy, an audit, of course, is after the fact, but we did see, the FBI did confirm that there were at least two counties that were attacked by Russian hackers in the 2016 campaign. Tammy, are you convinced, as the head of the Florida Election Supers group, that your colleagues are ready to fend off those attacks on the front door should they come again in 2020?
Well, and remember, when you hear the stories of the Russian hack-in, there's two systems in play. We have the voter registration system, and we have the tabulation system. And the tabulation system was not in any way part of the story.
Right, it was the voting registration sort of systems that the hackers
right.
were poking around
but
in.
Yes, I will tell you that compared to where we were in 2016, Florida is well ahead of where they were, but I can't guarantee, of course, put any guarantees out there, but we are getting the training we need. We're much more aware of what could cause you to get hacked. We have training very regular. Our employees are trained on the email threats. And like I said, that's why I just actually left conference today. We're being trained, you know, at the conferences. That's our main focus, is cybersecurity, physical security. It's not really all about cyber. It's about where are your ballots? Where is your equipment? You know, those
lots
are things
of moving
too, that are
parts.
Important.
Yeah, there's so much to this. And, you know, all kudos to the state's supervisors of elections, like Tammy Ion, who's retired. And we're going to continue the conversation as we look ahead to the big election in November of 2020. How secure is Florida's vote? More to come. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for starting the new year with us on this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Election Day, just 10 months away. And if history is any guide, Melissa, Florida voters are going to play a leading role in who wins the White House among a lot of important races.
That's right. Florida is a crucial swing state with 29 coveted electoral votes. Keep in mind, in 2016, President Trump won this state, but narrowly, by a little bit more than a point, 1.2 percentage points, actually. And so the vote again this year could be close, very close, bringing plenty of scrutiny into just how Florida counts those ballots. Here's Secretary of State Laura Lee speaking last month at a meeting of the state's cybersecurity task force.
Is that voting machines, the machines that actually scan and tabulate vote totals, are not connected to the internet while they are tabulating ballots. They are receiving and counting paper ballots, and at the end of the day, produce a tabulator tape that reflects the total votes cast and tabulated at that site. At no point during that process is there any connectivity. Thereafter, the encrypted results are modemed up to the Division of Elections.
Tammy Jones is the president of Florida Elections Supervisors, and Ian Sancho is a former election supervisor himself from Leon County. Ian is along with us from our sister station in Tallahassee, WFSU. Tammy joins us on the phone. Tammy, let me ask about election night and those election machines. As election volunteers and election supervisor employees tabulate those votes at precincts, how do those machines, how do those numbers get back to county election supervisors that then transmit them to the state, which then put them on the website for everybody to see?
That's a good question, because there is two steps to the process. So basically, in Levy County, every county is a little different. Some counties actually drag back their, you know, actual results. But Levy County, we modem in the results through a landline phone. And
so is that over the internet then?
No, we actually use a landline phone. It's not wireless, so it's actually coming through a phone line.
Right, but is it still over the internet, right? Like, if you remember the AOL dial-up days, you still used a telephone line to get on the internet.
It's not interceptable, if I could interject. That actually is the most secure way to transmit over a hardwired line.
So it's a point-to-point transmission.
Right, it's old-fashioned telephone line.
Right.
So that is the old-fashioned way, and that is the secure way to transmit data on analog lines, not digitally. You go to the internet, that's when it's digital.
That's when, and becomes more vulnerable. Let me ask you about this, Ian Sancho. You've talked about this on the Florida Roundup before. More than 80% of voting systems in use today are under the purview of just three vendors. Three. So a cyber attack against any of these companies could have devastating consequences for elections across the country, including here in Florida. And so what about calls that we've heard in recent years for independent oversight of the vendors, a federal certification program to issue standards and enforce vendor compliance? You're very familiar with this. So can you tell us a little bit more about this aspect of election security?
Well, elections are probably the most public of all of our procedures that we use in our governmental process. And unfortunately, it's run by the most private of any procedure, private vendors whose equipment is reviewed by private laboratories, certify the equipment. I can tell you that when I did the hack in Hacking Democracy in 2007, it turned out that the flaw in the entire system was that the private security companies had not checked the memory card. They just accepted the voting machine company's description that the memory card was essentially empty. That turned out to not to be true, and as we found out in the documentary Hacking Democracy, you could actually preload your voting machines, and the election administrator, the individual that's actually charged with making sure that the elections are safe and secure, would never even know. It was like you could load the ballot box before the election, and no one would be able to determine that, because the morning zero tape would show zero votes, but it could have thousands of votes on it. And this led to the Diebold AccuVote 2000 from essentially being prohibited from one individual to program it. And eventually the entire company went out of business because, quite frankly, election officials don't want to deal with companies who have errors in their system that could, quite frankly, allow an election to be stolen. Now, we have three companies now, the election system and software, known as ES&S, which has two-thirds of all the contracts among the state's 67 supervisor of elections, and Dominion, which has one-third of the voting equipment. And quite frankly, I do believe that federal oversight, looking into who are the private owners of these companies, the owners of ES&S are the McCarthy Group, LLC. That's it. Who are the McCarthy Group? Are there foreign holdings in the McCarthy Group? Likewise, Dominion, I actually know, is a Canadian company. What kind of impacts does having a Canadian company in the process do? There are no federal requirements, for example, for background checks for employers. And I happen to know that several former employees of companies selling equipment in the state of Florida are former felons. Quite frankly, there are problems with how private vendors are operating the system, and it's basically a take it or leave it. Hmm. When our disability voting requirements required us to come up with a device to ensure that anyone with a disability could vote independently and fairly, the ES&S company came up with one device. That's it. Take it or leave it.
You're referring to the requirement for ADA-compliant voting, which has led to some screen voting, not just paper ballot voting, which the majority of Floridians certainly experience those paper ballots.
Tammy Jones, correct.
I do want to ask you to kind of respond to some of those concerns that Ian puts voice to. You're the one, as the president of the Florida Election Supervisors, dealing with these vendors. Do you share those concerns to the degree that Ian puts voice to?
Well, I mean, it's up to the supervisor, the program, and you know, we actually are able to program our own elections, and I think that's important, and that's why we do the testing ahead of time. You know, we're not leaving it up to a vendor to test our stuff and make sure everything uploads. And when we do our testing, let me remind you, we're putting real ballots to the machines. We're taking those results. We're actually uploading real results to the machine. In pre-mode, you know, it's in election mode. The computer doesn't know the difference. You actually will zero everything out and start over, but you're seeing those results and you're making sure, you know, that if you properly test everything, you know, I really can't see how a vendor would have any control because you're not letting them in your system. I don't let a vendor into my system. You know, they might help, you know, if they were to help program in a county, which some counties do have help, it's the supervisors and the staff's job to ensure all the testing is done, that once that vendor, you know, is programmed or whatever, they're not, you know, coming back in and then in your, you know, you have control of your system. You're not hooked to the internet. You're not, you know, on a network. So there's no way for them to get in the system once you've programmed your election. In my county, we program usually, in most cases, our own election and we do all the testing. And testing is really key, you know, even before the big public logic and accuracy tests. We actually do many, many, many tests behind the scenes. I think testing is key to ensure that everything is properly programmed, to ensure your machine is going to, you know, properly. And the good thing to remember, right, we have paper. So worst case scenario, we have that piece of paper to go back to if there was any thought that there was anything wrong that had happened during that election. That piece of paper, even in my case, in my county, we have all in one. So our disabled voter even gets a piece of paper. So, you know, yeah, we have that piece of paper to go back to.
But nowhere in the state
machines,
of Florida.
Yeah, go ahead, Ian. Ian, let me just say.
In the state of Florida, do we formally, on a regular basis, compare the paper count to the machine count on all the races? We simply don't do that.
And that's what you're calling for.
That's a huge potential vulnerability. Absolutely.
Let me ask you, Ian, because on the one hand, we're hearing how much has been done over the last 4 years and how hard the supervisors have worked. But there's also continuing anxiety about this and cynicism in Florida. This growing sense among the voters that, you know, that perhaps we would be hacked again. I mean, we initially learned from the Mueller report that two Florida counties were spearfished by Russian hackers. Then we learned it was actually four. And we still don't know which counties were hacked. Governor DeSantis was made by the federal government to sign a non-disclosure agreement into that. So there's still there's still more that we need to learn. I think that contributes to the cynicism and the anxiety.
Well, I think it does, because quite frankly, federal officials have not been at all times truthful with Florida election officials. I was on the September 30th call from Homeland Security and the FBI from Jacksonville when we were told that a foreign actor had attempted to penetrate a vendor that did business in Florida. And they were directly asked on that phone call whether or not any of the counties had been hacked, and we were lied to. They told us none had been hacked, when the truth is it's somewhere between 1 and 4 based on the documents which so far have been released.
Do you think the FBI knew at that time on that phone call?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. They knew at that time. The Intercept report that Reality Winner released clearly makes that evident. They knew. And that's why they were making the telephone call to give us a heads up and offering help. But they did not tell us that any counties had been penetrated at that time. That information was not released until the Reality Winner Intercept report, which now she's spending 5 years in federal prison for, and the Mueller report, which then reinforced and confirmed what Reality Winner had said to us. And this state of Florida is suffering under the specter of Russian hacking. It has haunted us in 2016. It's haunting us in 2020. And part of that is because we weren't given the information necessary to make any kind of judgment. We don't know. And that is contributing to the cynicism, to the process that we have here in Florida.
And, you know, Tammy, even if machines and systems aren't breached, there are other ways to monkey around with the vote. Disinformation campaigns, bots on social media, trolling. There's a lot at play here, which makes it ever more important that your supervisors get it right and have the paper, as you said, to back up the results.
Well, I think it's important for people to contact their local supervisor if there's any concerns or something they see on social media. We, as an association, are actually working with our communication department, and we are working on a fact sheet. And we want citizens, parties, we want them to help disseminate the messages that, you know, so everyone is, you know, knows what the laws are, because a lot of people don't understand, you know, closed primaries and the deadlines. And, you know, like we mentioned earlier, it seems like the elections never end. Well, the elections do have a time frame where there's a cure period now. We now have a new cure period, for example. So, you know, people do have a chance to fix their, on a getting a different subject, but I just want to make it people aware that, you know, the best thing to do if you ever hear something that is upsetting you, I would say to call your local supervisor elections, because elections, we're responsible for our voters. You know, we want to make sure we take care of our voters. Every supervisor of elections in Florida cares about what they do. They wouldn't be doing it if they didn't. These supervisors work hard every day, and they're making sure the elections are secure. That definitely is top priority. But there's a lot of other things, you know, we do also to ensure that we're election ready, because we know 2020 is important.
Our focus
here.
You
know, we remain vigilant and, you know, nonpartisan, and assure voters that their vote does count. And we've, you know, tried to help, you know, get the message out. And I want to make clear, too, you know, that there is two separate systems. So, again, if we're talking about equipment, you know, I think it's important to remember when you hear the Russian hacking, that is something different. It's not into the tabulation machines, that we have security in place for those,
right,
where that does not happen.
Right. It was spear phishing into voter registration rolls that happened,
right,
ahead of the 2016 campaign. Let me remind,
exactly,
folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Speaking with Ian Sancho, former election supervisor in Leon County, with us from WFSU in our sister station in Tallahassee. Tammy Jones, you hear her on the phone. She's the president of Florida Election Supervisor. Tammy, let me ask you about what is a very public-facing piece of your work, which is election night and the results that certainly all the newsrooms, but a lot of folks here tune in and tune up to the websites to take a look at what the vote tally looks like. Those are very public websites that has to make them more vulnerable in certain ways to cyber attacks. But it also,
right,
means that from a communication standpoint, they're incredibly important for getting the information out in a timely and accurate way. So how do you protecting those public-facing websites from any potential threats when it comes to election night results?
That is a great question, and I'm glad you brought that up because it is a separate system, so they're not the official results. So anything you see on the website, it's, you know, yes, it comes from our system, but, you know, if our website were something to happen to it, you know, too many users on it or it gets defaced or, you know, we've heard of all the stories of things that could happen because, like you said, it is an online system. So, yes, of course, we know that's a big vulnerability for us. But just keep in mind, we have other plans in place. For example, we can put our results on our website. Most supervisors have social media, Facebook, Twitter. We can start posting them there. So we have roundabouts, you know, if our website, something were to happen to our website, we have social media, you know, we have a lot of protections in place to secure our websites. I'm not, you know, again, I can't guarantee anything, but we're well aware of that possibility. And we want the people to know that the website results are really not the official results. And elections don't end election night. You know, I'm in a small county.
We sure learned that in 2018, didn't we?
Florida, South Florida.
My election pretty much almost, you know, besides a couple provisional ballots. And but if you're in a big county, you have 20, 30 sites, offices. I might be exaggerating a little bit, maybe 10. And those sites at 7 p.m., voters have till 7 p.m. to bring their ballots in. Then they bring those ballots back to the office. They're properly checked to ensure, you know, the things that are needed that are on that envelope. They're opened by the canvassing board. They're tabulated. You know, supervisors of elections work very hard. And I think it is important for the public to know that we do now have a cure period for vote-by-mail ballots. So, like, for example, if someone forgets to sign their envelope of the return ballot or their signature did not match, they now have till Thursday after the election to cure that vote by mail. So the good news is, you know, that person's, we want to make sure every vote counts. So
that is good news because the signature match issue has been another headache for elections officials and voters as well when they don't find their signature matches.
I've been in elections. I'm sorry.
And we got to go to break. We got to go to break, Tammy.
Okay.
But okay. And let's pick it up in a moment. We're going to continue talking about the security of our elections here in Florida in 2020.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening this week and Happy New Year. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue our conversation examining the security of Florida's elections system, Lots has been done since 2016 to make sure that all 67 Florida counties are secure and not vulnerable to cyber threats. All of the counties, as we've learned this hour, are now equipped with an intrusion detection system. And the state was one of the first to have all of its counties signed up for an alert and information sharing system. Paper ballots are used statewide. And as we continue the conversation with Tammy Jones, president of the Florida Supervisors of Elections, and Ian Sancho, retired supervisor of elections in Leon County, we have some more questions. Ian, earlier in the hour, you said you didn't think the state had allocated enough resources to election security. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis did call for millions in election security measures. There were federal grants as well. So how much more do you think the state should be spending on this?
All of this money is being spent at the front end. All of it is at trying to prevent, detect and prevent penetrations on the front end systems. And that's not enough. You have to go to the back end. And that's where the audit comes in. Because even if you have, if you fail to do the penetration block, if you fail to detect it, if, for example, it's in there already today and just waiting to be turned on, as some security experts think may have occurred in other states and perhaps Florida, the issue is if you count the paper ballots, if you audit them and compare that to the electronic totals, it's irrelevant what they have done to the tabulation system. There was in last year's legislation, Senate Bill 7066, efforts that in fact would have done that. The association has in fact taken that same position this year, and that's excellent. And I would say that the supervisor of elections are the most dedicated group of public officials that I've ever had to spend any time with, and I spent over 28 years with them. Mm-hmm. So I'm not attacking them. They are only allowed to do what the Florida legislature tells them to do, and that's the problem. The Florida legislature has been dominated by one party since 1998. They have repeatedly turned down Florida Supervisor of Elections recommendations. They at one point truncated early voting. They did unnecessary voter ID requirements.
Right, but
they made it more difficult for absentee ballots.
Those are certainly access to voting, no doubt about it, but not necessarily election security, which is what we want to focus on here, because there's lots of talk about around election, no doubt about it, Ian.
But
let me get Tammy Jones. Let me get Tammy to respond to just a couple of things you said there here regarding election security. And one was you floated the hypothetical that perhaps there's something lurking already that's waiting to be turned on inside Florida's election systems. Tammy, is that a real threat? Is that a possibility? Is that something that you and your fellow county election supervisors have considered?
Well, I will tell you some great news. We have been working with the Secretary of State, Laura Lee, and we have what's called a joint election security initiative. It's called JESSE, and every single county, 67 counties, have been scanned for vulnerabilities. And there's navigators that have come to each county. They are ensuring that any vulnerabilities are being patched or fixed.
Do you know what those results of those vulnerabilities are?
Well, for the security, you know, we can't exactly go into great detail because, you know, every system, they could leave today and there might be something else tomorrow with every update that comes out with security patches and, you know, it definitely, I'll tell you, it makes me more at ease knowing that, you know, those things we're now more aware, especially like in a small county. You know, we don't have the resources like Supervisor Sancho said. So I think I think it's a great thing. I mean,
It is so gratifying to learn how hard you guys have been working and how much has been done in the last 4 years. But what about what Tom and Ian mentioned, that the technology exists to set a trap, you know, to essentially write a program or write malware that goes off only at the correct important moment and would not be detected.
And could not be detected
beforehand or afterwards. We've seen these sort of simulations that show that's possible.
The great thing to keep in mind, you know, people are voting through paper. If you have electronic poll books, you're providing a paper book for backup. Paper. You know, you have to have paper backup. If something zapped, you know, your system just shut down, nothing would work, you know, you would count the paper. I mean, you know, that's the thing is, the election's going to happen regardless. Whatever happens to your system, we have backup plans in place. You know, it's not the equipment does all.
Does require, Tammy, that all ballots have to be scanned through certified voting equipment.
I'm just saying
to
worst
tabulate.
Case scenario.
Right, know, but I mean, I'm saying the law doesn't allow us to do the worst case scenario right now, and
when
that's what I see.
Happened last year. We're supposed to also use precincts, but when the hurricane happened last year, those counties had to start using like super sites, and there had to be some changes in the way things are normally done. You know, in emergency situations, you pull the emergency rule out, and there's, you know, luckily, I mean, like you said, you know, the law says that, but, you know, we have the paper. I think in a court of law, the judge would be like, count the paper. You know, I can't speak for a judge, but. I think it's important that piece of paper is there.
We did see that in the 2018 election, Tammy, and one federal judge called the Florida election recount system the laughingstock of the nation. Has that been addressed in your estimation, the recount procedures and kind of vulnerabilities that we even saw in 2018?
Well, I think, you know, I think 67 counties, I think there was, you know, I think we failed to mention 65 counties had a pretty good recount, you know.
Fair enough. That is true. Yes.
My county had 100% accuracy. I mean, every single ballot that went through my machine was counted accurately. You know, I think it is harder in a bigger county. You have to be very careful to the ballot placements or where you, you know, label the boxes correctly. You know, I mean, I think there's logistics are a little different in bigger counties. And talking to Miami-Dade supervisor, Christina White, she had a really, really good system in place, and she was very successful during the recount. And I think she deserves a great round of applause for her success. You know, I think there was a lot of success. And unfortunately, you know, we always say, you know, we are on this together. Every county, we know that's why every county is, you know, trying to stay targeted, because just one county, if something happened to one county, it actually could affect the whole
state. It can gum up the works.
And
yeah, that's right.
The reason Florida is in the spotlight, and we happen to always look bad, it's kind of unfair to us supervisors that really work super hard, 80 hours a week, even on off year when people think there's no elections happening. But, you know, we do a lot of things right. You know, we're just in the spotlight.
Yeah, and I'm glad we're able to shine a light on that through this
right.
hour, Tammy, because you do work so hard. And the vast majority of the counties get their stuff in on time and accurately. And you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Let me go, in the few minutes we have left, to Ian Sancho. Ian, we are, of course, expecting record turnout in November 2020 at the polls in Florida and across the nation. So your supervisor of elections colleagues are going to have a huge job in front of them, tabulating all
them.
Those votes. I know what you mean. So what it were actually 2 minutes before the end of the show. What are your final thoughts about this issue?
Well, I think the supervisor elections have done everything possible to try to prepare, and they are preparing. I know about the meetings going on, the discussions constant. However, we can do things like implement audits before the certification period. Again, one of the things that Tammy mentioned is elections don't end on Tuesday, and unfortunately, the media pushes that. They want to push those Tuesday night totals, but the mail ballots, that the tabulations won't be completed until Saturday after the Tuesday election. Saturday is when the first unofficial returns of the votes are due to the Secretary of State's office, and maybe we should focus more energy on ensuring that Saturday is the number that we start arguing over instead of Tuesday, when tens of thousands of mail ballots cannot have been counted and added to the total. And mail ballots are the biggest bugaboo that we had in the 2018 election, when many of these were not counted and they were started to put in the system. And people said, new votes, new ballots, what's going on? What's going on is our timelines don't actually meet the population of this state. Certification deadlines are wrong. And in fact, this state can and must do better, owing to its citizens and our history,
Ian,
to ensure that elections count those votes properly.
Let me give the last word here to Tammy Jones, president of the Florida Elections Supervisors, who will be working diligently, obviously, in the next 10 months and beyond here. Tammy, is there too much focus on the results on election night? Trying to change that focus to maybe a few days later seems like maybe changing the date of Christmas, like, or the date of New Year's. Like, that isn't going to happen, is it?
Well, we are under somewhat of a time frame because of the way the December official count actually is due. So, but, you know, the time for the actual count, and especially the recount period, could be extended a day or two. And that's something we have talked about before. But I believe that there's
okay, well,
that
you know what? We're out of time, but amazing insights from both of you. So thank you both for kicking off the new year on the Florida Roundup with us. Tammy Jones, president of the Florida Supervisor of Elections. Ian Sancho, retired supervisor of elections in Leon County. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
And that's our show.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to the Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT in Jacksonville and WLRN in Miami. Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Melissa Ross.
I'm Tom Hudson. Heather Schatz, Denise Royal are our producers. Jason Zabka, the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. The Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Have a great New Year.